The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. We have a full studio today. We've Conan, we've Keen, we've Stevie. The whole team here for a championship preview. Now, I don't like championship previews because they're too generic and it's hard to nail down something. We're going to give it a go, lads. We're going to give it a go. It has to be done. Championship previews have to be done. The championship has started. I'm aware of that as you're giving out listening to the podcast. It has started. But we previewed the game last week, so maybe we should have done the preview of the championship 2 weeks ago, but we didn't, so shut up, leave us on with it. A few things to get through, lads, before we go. And because we didn't have a podcast on Monday, because RTE didn't show the bloody game, and what was the point? We won't get back into that again, Conan. But we had Niall Carew on the phone last week, and he did a really good interview. He was really honest, spoke openly about their routine out there, you know, gave New York the, you know, we're expecting a really tough game, that kind of stuff. But then came out after the game and we had Justin O'Halloran, the New York manager, on as well, who kind of was honest too and saying, yeah, we think we have a very good chance against Sligo. You know, we have a really good team this year. We did well against Donegal. The lads are training really hard, and was honest too. But Niall Carew took exception to this. Not sure if it was a GAA interview, but he, you know, this was the narrative coming out of New York that we have a right good chance. And it's all right to say that, right? So Niall Carew comes out after the game and says they probably showed us a lot of disrespect with the quality of players we have. So because New York thought they had a good chance of beating Sligo, Sligo were two or three players down, lads doing exams, lads being injured. Sligo are a mid-table Division 3 team. New York would be a lower Division 4 team. I think New York are allowed to say, we have a chance here, without it being pinned on the Sligo dressing room door. And lads, I don't want this to go on for the summer, that we were disrespected.
Well, listen, if you're taking part in a championship, you've got to be realistic and you've got to go into a game with full of confidence. And New York obviously looked at the Sligo team and seen that there was absentees. New York team this year, especially, probably more so than any other year, have had a lot of inter-county experienced players playing for them. So,
did it, yes.
So why would they not believe in their own ability, but and why would they not expect to go and get a result against Sligo?
But this is the thing, though, and this is what stops players being honest in interviews. Is Niall Carew coming out with like something like this? They didn't disrespect Sligo. They just thought they had a good chance of beating a team that's not that high above them. So how are we going to get players coming out before games speaking openly and honestly? If a manager like Niall, you beat New York because you're a better team. You handled the travelling well. You took them seriously. That's why you beat them. Like, you don't need to come out with this disrespect stuff.
Well, that's disrespect to language by Niall Carew. You know, there was no disrespect from New York at all. They felt they had a chance to win the game. It's interesting the little snippets you get from out of the Sligo camp after the match. I heard an interview with Charlie Harrison, and he was kind of saying, you know, that there was a lot of pressure on them to win that game because all the talk was that how New York had these experienced players and how everybody wanted New York to win the game. So that was kind of what they were pitching themselves at for the match. So maybe after I don't know when that interview was, maybe after the game or
yeah,
something like that. So look, emotions are high. Who knows what sort of stuff was going on along the line. He may not have been referring to disrespect in interviews pre-match. He might have been talking about disrespect along the sideline by supporters at the match.
He said, I just felt they were getting above their station. It gets better. That 9 or 10 point win proved we're on the right road. We knuckled down and got the required result. There was no way we're going to lose this game. You know, so
A little bit unnecessary from...
Yeah. Fairly hard on New York,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Like, a little bit hard. I think Sligo maybe were better served to pick up their victory and move on. Now, in fairness to them, they prepared very well. Again, the information you get out is they were doing all their prep on all-weather pitches and stuff like that, and picking the team specifically based on guys who have been performing on all-weather pitches. So that's quite impressive from their perspective. So well done to Sligo. Very difficult task to go over there, particularly because New York had a more experienced and, you would say, a stronger team this year than in previous seasons.
Exactly. But please, managers, stop using this kind of angle with your players. You don't need it.
I was going to say, but it works. Like, I was listening to Sports Duel Live last night.
Does it work?
You know, Ronan O'Gara was on. You were talking about Jamie Heasa punching the air for the Rugby World Cup draw. But just anything to get an edge, it does. I think, like, this will have been drummed in the Sligo players for the last week. This is what they think of you. They think you're shit. They think they can beat you. New York never won a game. It does work. It makes you do an extra run. It gets you out of bed earlier.
But like, no, but hang on. Is the embarrassment of losing to Sligo, is the embarrassment of being knocked out of the Connacht Championship enough without trying to make a big thing out of a few harmless quotes from another? You know, I don't think that culture needs to stop.
Well, I think that there's always small things. Managers are always looking for small things, because you're going to preach, if you're coaching a team, you're preaching the same things all year long about all the things you want to get done, the way you want to play and whatnot. So in the lead up to a game, you need something different. You need a small little angle to come out with your team. And sure, lads make up stuff all the time. You always hear this. You want to hear what these lads are saying about you. Sure, nobody said anything. But it's just the psychology of it, to try and get that little edge. I'm sure, Stevie, I'm sure you have plenty of tips from your under 21 experience.
I do. What I would say about that point is, Niall Crew come out after the game. Listen, the job is done and dusted. Move on to the next task. You know, forget about what was said beforehand. Essentially, what Niall Crew is basically saying is, New York have no right or no authority to be playing in the senior championship. You know, and that's, who do they think they are coming up against Sligo and expecting to win? You know, that shouldn't be the case at all.
I'd love to know the quotes he's talking about, because I was reading a lot in the build up to the game. I didn't really see any disrespect. But anyways, we can move on from that. The point I'm trying to make with that is, we're trying to get players to be honest. We're trying to get players to give an honest opinion. And no wonder they're so bloody terrified to say anything, because he's like the most.
Yeah, you want lads to give you interviews and give you some interesting information.
When I read that from Carew, I was like, what are you saying, Carew? How will you give my job a chance here? Like, how am I supposed to get anything? But look, we'll move on to that, because I want to talk about the Gooch on the Sunday game, lads. I was surprised, to be honest, when I heard Gooch was going into punditry, only because he did a show with us last year and he had no enthusiasm for talking about football. Like, we did a show on Sugar Club. I did a warm-up show in the AIB Centre with him, and we did more of an analytical piece about kickouts, Cluxton's kickouts, etc. Gooch was bored to tears about this stuff, you know. And then when we went to the Sugar Club, he really opened up, because it was more about chatting about preparation for All Ireland finals, you know, more fun stuff. So when I heard he's going to be a pundit, I kind of was surprised. And then I started thinking, on what basis was RTE hiring him? It's true, no evidence of, you know, kind of being an outspoken kind of person. They're purely throwing money at him just because he's the Gooch and he's a legend. And I'm like, why on earth? What kind of a business model is that?
Could it be coming off the back of Joe Brawley's comments against him? Maybe RT are trying to spice things up a wee bit. Put them on some particular show.
Brawley's on the Day Show. He's very rare on the Right Show. And throwing Gooch onto a live TV show against Brawley is like just throwing a lamb to the slaughter. Like, I mean, that's completely unfair.
Because he certainly wouldn't get a word on edge, is it?
No.
I think when you're a name as big as Gooch, so it probably doesn't matter like how much you want to talk about football or how good you are at it. I think there's like a graph of being a good pundit and being such a big name that it doesn't matter. So either way, if you're really good pundit or you're a really good name, you're going to get across the line of what people will watch. Like, it doesn't matter if he's crap at it. I'll be interested to see what he has
It'll work in the short term, because everybody wants to hear what Gooch has to say, because he never really gave many interviews in his playing career. So everybody's interested to hear what sort of stuff is he going to see, because obviously he could see the game in a certain way
when
he
played it.
Very clever player, and picked up pockets of space. So it'll be interesting to see if he can give a small bit of insight to educate people, because that's the capacity he has. Now, whether he is a good enough communicator to get that across in the platform remains to be seen, but I think hopefully it's a really good move, because I'd like to see it going well, because potentially he has a huge amount to offer compared to a lot of what we've seen.
Or is he good enough?
Yeah, what we've been crying out for in the Sunday game in particular is players who have played the game in the last 10-15 years, players who have knowledge of playing against defensive systems and how to counteract that.
Rory Cavan has been great, I thought.
Exactly, you know, so you want the likes of the Gooch. I'm looking forward to actually seeing this first couple of shows to see what he has to offer, if it is in-depth analysis that will offer, you know, feedback to the general public and give them an insight into what it takes to maybe counteract defensive systems and things like that.
But there's also another way of looking at this, is that, you know, he'll probably be on the nighttime show and he might have, be a really clever player, but there's also things being a clever player and being able to watch a video and being able to pull that analysis out and be able to turn it around fast enough, you know, after a 5 o'clock game for the 9 o'clock show with no experience. And you wonder, has he done any interview process for this? You know, so you're just saying, right, Gooch, we want him. It's a bit like Sky do that. They'll just go get the biggest names. I think it's a little bit old-fashioned just to have to go for the, you know, the best players, that you think outside the box, and, you know, you can find loads of different players to do that.
Yeah, well, I suppose it really depends on the show they're trying to provide, and to be fair, the show they're trying to provide isn't based on in-depth analysis of anything.
No, no.
It's sort of a highlight show, which actually doesn't show enough highlights, and then and then they talk about the things that everybody sees anyway. So it's kind of, look, everybody tunes into it because there's no competition for it. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, there's nothing else there. Right, we'll move on to that. Oh yeah, I wanted to mention David Clifford, lads, because we mentioned the Gooch. The Gooch retires and David Clifford is on the way. Another left footer. Last night he scored 2-8 against Cork in the Munster Minor Championship. 2-5 from play, 2 frees and a sideline ball. So like, this lad's just going to be a sensation, and all you can do is fingers crossed that he doesn't get his head turned by Australia, because I know they're after him. And I just saw this morning Mark O'Connor, who went last year, brilliant midfielder, 2 minor All-Irelands with Kerry, he's made the senior squad in Geelong already. Like, he only went out last September, so like, this is the quality. It's heartbreaking that if Clifford goes, lads, I will be really annoyed. Never. Could you imagine what it's going to be like? I saw Tomás O'Shea tweet that they're going to have to build a wall to not let Ty Kennelly in into the county.
If Clifford goes, would you blame him? You know,
see,
there's an opportunity there for maybe professional contract, and you know, we don't have that in our game, and you know, he is a special talent. He's definitely a player that we'd love to see more of during the course of this championship campaign. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't blame a young fella like that. If he's offered a chance to go to a country like Australia to play a professional sport, give it a go. What has he got to lose, you know? And it's no surprise that young players are going down and breaking through in such a short space of time, because they've got the quality.
It is sad, though. It is sad that we lose him, and you could lose him for good.
I'd say a few knocks on his door over the next couple of weeks or next couple of months from Kerry legends, maybe trying to put an arm around his shoulder and tell him that this is the place to be. I mean, Colin Cooper talked about him the time he was on the show in the Sugar Club, and he was saying about, oh, how I always was motivated to play for Kerry and win All-Ireland for Kerry. And it was sort of starting back then, even, like, when this man was eating the minor championship alive even last year.
But the Gooch was crap at the compromise rules, so he probably wouldn't have.
You're looking at different types of player. Like, Mark O'Connor's a midfielder up and down the field.
That's another thing.
Clifford's an inside forward. That's where he predominantly does his best work. He's more of an artist.
He is an artist, but he is a big enough fella.
He is,
you know,
a big, but listen, he's a big powerful man, but there's a big difference between playing corner forward in Gaelic football and or full forward or whatever it is, and then trying to go out and play compromise or the Aussie rules.
I agree.
Totally different sport. So look, it would be a huge risk for him. Obviously, if he gets the opportunity, he may or may not. He might have no bloody interest. A lot of people have no interest in Aussie rules, think it's a poxy sport and couldn't care less about it. Hopefully he's like that.
It would be a huge risk, but remember back to Marty Clark. He was a marquee forward before he went down under, and he actually became a mark and half back out there. So he did, you know, they had transformed his game into something else that he wasn't, I believe, and that's probably why, you know, he maybe got annoyed with it and got homesick with the game that he was playing, and frustrated. He grew frustrated with it and ultimately came home.
They say, but he got an illness. That's why he lost form.
Illness,
and he still has it, so his career's gone. But they say that, just quickly before we move off this, Colin Begley got the same role when he went out there. Zach Toohey, he got the same role. They say for when you're new with the ball, that they give you a job tagging somebody. You know what I mean? Because it's the easiest way to get you into playing a game without having to influence it too much. Just, you know, man-mark somebody, and that's it. Which is weird for attacking wing-backs and, you know, centre-forward Marty Clark having to turn themselves into man-markers.
It requires a completely different mindset, and some people are that way inclined and some people aren't.
Yeah, exactly. Quickly, lads, James O'Donoghue is back from injury. I saw these headlines. He's really struggled since he won Player of the Year in 2014. He hasn't been able to build on it. And, like, I'm frustrated for him because, you know, he's such a brilliant player. He's an explosive player. We interviewed Brian Hurley on the show last week, and his career could potentially be over with two terrible hamstring injuries. James O'Donoghue has problems with his shoulders. It just got me thinking the amount of players that actually genuinely get lost because of injury. Like, it's really, really sad. Like, I know James O'Donoghue can't complain too much. He's won an All-Ireland and he's Player of the Year. But then you're thinking this lad's going to kick on and be a real deal, like, you know, the Gooch. But you could potentially be a real deal, but your body just won't allow you. Like, it's a weird one. You were lucky enough, Stevie, in your career.
I was lucky enough, but James O'Donoghue is a special talent. We all seen how he lit the country alight in 2014. And so certainly, you know, from our point of view, I'd love to see him back playing the explosive corner forward player that he is. But, you know, I had a teammate, Ronan Clark, who was exactly the same as him. Exploded onto the scene, such a young age. Young Footballer of the Year. Took players like Seamus Moynihan and Paddy Christie, the marquee fullbacks at the time, to the cleaners, basically. And, you know, had a career hampered with injury and didn't fulfil his true potential. So hopefully that's not going to be the case with James O'Donoghue, that he does come out the right end of it and, you know, has a career for Kerry, and that we do see the best of him. But, you know, the last couple of seasons he has been seriously hampered, and we haven't seen what James O'Donoghue can go out and portray his full array of skills.
Yeah, and just think of another one. Shane O'Rourke's another one, right, who could be really really top like Harry Redknapp here, top player.
Yeah, well, like Shane O'Rourke pretty much single handedly brought Simonstown to a senior championship in Meath last season. So, I mean, he's an incredibly good player, but just unfortunately with the volume of training that it takes for inter-county level, his body probably just couldn't sustain it. So, look, I think, I don't know whether he'll ever make that transition back to county football. I'm sure Andy McIntyre would love to have him, but it's just whether or not the body can take it. But back to James O'Donoghue, like, I mean, he's a top-class player, and the thing is, unless he has a run of games and is really sharp, the type of player he is, which is very much a straight line runner, very explosive, he's not really the type of player that twists and turns in terms of selling sidesteps. You know, he kind of, you know, picks a direction and goes at pace. So
he'll throw one and then...
Yeah, he'll throw one and go. Yeah. He doesn't really have that sort of sidestep jinx. So he needs to be at his best physically to be able to perform to his best. So, again, he's had quite a disrupted season this year throughout the league campaign. He probably needed a good league campaign under his belt.
Yeah,
But hopefully, look,
but
let's face
champ,
it.
Yeah
look, later on in the championship, hopefully he can pick up a bit of form, because Kerry need him, really.
Yeah, and you could say, like, you know, that league, checkered league, not playing too much might suit him down to the ground come the championship, that he's actually focused. He's back fully fit now. So his season's starting now, you know what I mean? So he can really be fresh and really hit the ground running. And if he can stay injury free, we'll get to predictions later on. But I've James a little, I have a little thought about James O'Donoghue this summer.
The scary thing for Kerry.
No, he's not actually getting football this year.
The scary thing for Kerry, though, is that they're so close to becoming Kerry again. You know, like, if you've Geaney, O'Donoghue, Savage is coming to the fore, and then we're talking about Clifford. They're like, they're so close, but then there's so many little factors that could just take that away from them a little bit. Like, they haven't had that real frightening team in a few years, like, and they're so close to it.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. Right, lads, we've talked enough, because we have a championship preview coming after this. Dearly, great to finally get the interview, yeah?
Oh, really, yeah. Why is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching the side either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB backing club and county.
All right, lads, where to start? I suppose, are we excited about this? Now, do not descend into championship structures. We know what we have. But are we excited about the championship in general?
Of course you have to be excited. Listen, May is the time of year that all the inter-county players train for. You know, us as supporters now love the atmosphere and the build up towards these big games, and there certainly is plenty of big games in the foreseeable future, in the next coming weeks, and particularly in the Ulster Championship anyway. You know, I see a few key games there that I'd be interested in going to, and
good man, Stevie,
will spark a bit of life into the championship.
Yeah, no, well, that's true. Like, genuinely, you can have a genuine excitement about the Ulster Championship. I don't think anybody say that, even though I think the Ulster Championship is massively overrated. They have three teams possible that will win it: Tyrone, Donegal, Monaghan. Nobody outside those three will win it, and they have no All-Ireland contenders. So, like, the Ulster Championship, they don't have any All-Ireland.
Three out of nine, that's a lot of the championship.
Totally, no, and that's fair enough. But, like, Connacht have two that can potentially win it: Galway and Mayo. And Leinster have won, and Munster have won.
Ulster are three teams that finished in the top five of the National League Division 1.
Yeah, they're the three. Right, they're the three.
But you ruled them out of the All-Ireland.
I don't think they're... Genuinely, lads, if you're going to bet on an All-Ireland, you wouldn't be betting on Monaghan, Tyrone or Donegal. You'd be, like, they'd be an outside bet. But my point is, like, you've got the Fermanaghs, the Derrys, the Downs, these teams, and the Antrims in the Ulster Championship. Armagh. Like, Armagh couldn't get out of Division 3. Fermanagh, Down and Derry were in the relegation shake-up from Division 2. So, like, you know, when you actually look at it, and it is exciting because this is parochial and there's a lot of history between these games, but the chances are Tyrone will hammer Derry. You know that kind of way. Armagh Down is a game between, is it any different than Leash and Longford? Like, let's call a spade a spade. You know, I think because when it's in the Ulster Championship, it's
more,
given this glamour kind of time.
There'll be more intensity in them games.
So. Yeah, well, because, yeah, but at the same time, is there any difference in the level? If Dublin weren't in Leinster, would you be looking at Leinster going, geez, this is a brilliant championship? I think that the standard sometimes is overrated in Ulster because,
well, it's the style
of the competitiveness.
Yeah, it's the style of the way the games are played or have traditionally been played. Look, at we don't know what way it's going to play out this year, but that's the way it's been. It's been quite, you know, very, very ultra competitive.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the way that Ulster teams play their football. In Leinster, there is a slightly different culture to how the game is played. You can't say one is better than the other because the league table would show you that, you know, there's plenty of top class Ulster teams, and Leinster is probably slightly weaker on the basis of the four divisions.
Only outside of division, or only outside of All Ireland contenders. Like, I think outside of the three, Monaghan, Donegal, and Tyrone, I think the standard of Ulster teams is pretty, you know what I mean, it's pretty on a par with anything in Leinster or anything, you know.
Well,
or
look, Longford have kind of shown that in the qualifiers over the last number of years. Like, they've gone up on a few occasions and beaten these Ulster teams. So, look, on a given day in Championship football, the difference between teams is probably quite minuscule.
Yeah, and what I would say is there's no doubt Tyrone, Donegal and Monaghan are above every other team, and they've got great underage structures and have had success in the past couple of years at underage level, but we're not taking away from the fact that Armagh have been improving. You know, Cavan made the step up to Division 1, they're now back into Division 2, alright, but you know, there is progress being made there. There is a gap, there's no doubt about the gap that is there, but the gap is there in every single provincial championship.
Yeah.
You know, what we are saying is that the Ulster Championship is still a more competitive championship than any other, and you will probably see more tighter games in the Ulster Championship than any other. We're not saying that, you know, any of them lower teams are you know, certainly going to kick on and give the All Ireland series a run, but I definitely wouldn't be ruling out Tyrone and Donegal for All Ireland contenders.
But I think they're still behind the top three. You know, the Mayo, the Kerry, and the Dublin.
I agree with that, but that ultra competitiveness, what Cian's talking about, is like an oasis of something you're interested in at this time of year, because for the first 2 months of the championship, it is going to be shit. But there'll be a couple of competitive games in Ulster, there'll be three or four that you'll be like, geez, at least it's not great football, but there's a point in it here. We don't know what way it's going to go in the last 10 minutes. And
but is Derry and Tyrone, like, I'm really looking forward to that.
No,
but on the evidence of what, like, Tyrone hammered them the last time they played them. I'm on the evidence of rivalry.
That's,
and you know, 10 years ago, the 90s, when they hated each other and they were, you know, brilliant games. But because that has that history and because that's coming up, I'm looking forward to that game, you know. But should I be looking forward to it as much as I am?
I don't think so. No. I look forward to it last year because it was like, well, like, we've got them at home, we're Derry, we're playing to our own, like, we give them a good scene to hear, but they hammered us. So now I've learned from last year, it's like, well, they're just a better team. I think it will be something similar again, but we still will get a couple of competitive matches, which we'll be crying out for the first 2 months of the championship.
Have a look at this now in the Leinster Championship, lads, because this is the quarterfinals. You've got, all right, this is the first round. So you have Loud versus Wicklow, two teams at the same level. Leash versus Longford, two teams at the same level. Carlow against Wexford, a local derby. So the winners of that then, Carlow or Wexford play Dublin. Just write that off. But the winners of Loud and Wicklow will be Loud. They play Meath, a local rivalry, hatred there. The winners of Leash and Longford probably be Leash, will play Kildare, local rivalry, hatred there. The winner are then Offaly play Westmead, local rivalry, hatred. Like, I mean, if Dublin weren't in the Leinster Championship, this would be marketed an awful lot better than it was. But I don't have the interest in any of those games, maybe Meath and Kildare if they get through, because Dublin are just going to hammer them in the final. So Dublin have ruined what could be a really good championship. If you know,
do you know what ruins Leinster for me mostly is Croke Park. Like, when you're naming those games that won't be in Croke Park, I'm thinking of an empty Croke Park for some reason. That's what I think of when I think of the Leinster Championship. And rather, like, when you think of Ulster then? Do you think of Ballybuffet and all these hard places to go, like, and the stands full and just a better atmosphere?
Yeah, that is a good point, Conan, because there are some great provincial venues in Leinster, and there's some cracking games can be played. Like, I mean, Meath Loud, if it turns out that way, which you expect it would be in Parnell Park. That's a really tight ground. There'd be a cracking atmosphere tight pitch. There'd be a huge amount of physicality in that game. So, I mean, immediately that's a game to look forward to. Laois Longford, immediately that's a game to look forward to, because they're very, very competitive with each other. The winners play Kildare. That'll probably be in...
It's in O'Connor Park, and that'll be a great game too. Yep.
You know,
so sometimes I think these great games, like, there's no talk about anyone looking forward to these, only because the winner doesn't ever get anywhere, you know?
It's true, it's a fair point.
Yeah, but, you know, some of these great games and build up to these games, you know, can spark life into the championship as well. I personally would be looking forward to Louth and Meath, you know, on past history, and I would expect Louth to come out in the right end of the
You've a lot in common here. You both hate Louth.
Well, I'm just not too bothered about them. So I don't know if that worse.
You've only scored 4 goals against them in a championship game.
I'm generally not too bothered about them either, because Armagh seem to have the upper hand on them. But it's certainly a game that I would be interested in going to watch in the Leinster Championship. I would also be interested in Laois against Kildare, because I think while Laois were relegated and had a poor league campaign, you know, they can very much turn it around in the championship.
Did everybody back? I text one of the players this morning and he says no, all the injuries have cleared up and stuff like that. So I think, genuinely think, Laois will be a completely different animal. Now, I did tip them to go well in the league, but like, so maybe don't be going putting money on Laois, but you'd fancy them to beat Longford and set up a grade. But that was the point I was trying to make, just in general, about the perception of Ulster and the perception of Leinster. And then when you actually break it down, there's not off and off. Like, if you put Dublin, Tyrone, it's the fact that Ulster have 3 teams and Leinster have 1, but the 3 teams in Ulster are way below Leinster's best, and that's what makes
if you swap Dublin with any of the top 3 contenders in Ulster and put them into the Leinster Championship, the Leinster Championship would be very competitive. Like, if you swap Dublin with either Monaghan, Tyrone, and Donegal, then you'd have a seriously competitive Leinster Championship and everybody would think they'd have a chance of winning it.
Would be great.
But are those 3 teams way below Dublin? You know,
they are.
They came closer to them this year in the league campaign than any other.
I think possibly they are in Croke Park.
Way below them in Croke Park, I think. I think Dublin have destroyed Monaghan in Croke Park. They've destroyed Donegal in championship football. They beat them by 5 last year, but didn't Donegal... It wasn't a hammering, no. But Dublin never looked like they weren't in complete control. It reminded me of them playing Laois, maybe, where Laois got to win in 3 points.
My argument is that I believe this year, more than any other year, teams have actually got closer to Dublin.
I would agree with that, sure.
You know, so therefore, the likes of your Tyrone, Donegal, Monaghan, Kerry, they've got a renewed belief this year going into the championship, and they certainly feel Croke Park, wherever it may be, that they can put up the Dublin more so than what they have done in previous years.
I think that's
disrespecting Dublin, as Niall Carew would say.
Well, I think the thing about it is when the likes of Tyrone, Donegal and Monaghan get to Croke Park, they're just playing too defensive a game to beat Dublin. Now, if they flip that on its head this year and approach the game in a different manner, I think man for man and players on the field, they're certainly good enough
and
to compete with Dublin and beat them, and that's the difference. Like, I mean,
Kerry learnt that lesson in the league final.
Yeah, I think
stop giving
teams,
Keane O'Sullivan the free roll.
If they play without, I suppose, not without fear, because there's always inevitably there's fear going into every game. You have to be, you know, afraid that you're not going to perform, or the lad you're marking is going to give you a roasting. But like, as a collective, they need to be looking to go and win the game, attack the game to win it, not sit back and this bloody defensive stuff, because it won't work.
No, if you play Dublin 5 times with a really defensive mindset, you lose 5 times. Yeah. If you go for them, you might win 1 out of the 5. That's the way I look at it. And you just take your chances that 1 out of 5 is this year, and we you know what I mean? We'll catch them out. Like, Keane O'Sullivan getting taken off in the league final is an inspiration to any manager who's watched the video. Ring Kerry, get the video of it, analyse it, you know, and find out that Gainey gave him trouble and made him think about who he's marking. And like, I mean, I remember doing an analysis on this before in a league match with Kerry in Dublin, and Keane O'Sullivan doesn't want that marking responsibility. He tries to orchestrate that someone else is marking his man so he can drop. But if the other men have somebody to worry about, Keane can't do that, and then his orchestration is gone. Jim Gavin just sits there like on the sideline. He doesn't give instructions from the sideline. He might send somebody in, but Keane makes all these decisions himself. And then when he gets a bit scrambled on the field, then Dublin look a little bit rattled, you know. So I definitely think there's no doubt. That's another point, Keane, I was wondering about. Are we going to see teams being more attacking, you know, because we've seen Tyrone come up a little bit short in the last few years playing that style. It's getting that ballot. We saw Kildare and Galway in a league final, and they actually look like they're 3 years behind Tyrone and Donegal, who have learned that this more defensive kind of way, you have to get the balance between defence and attack. And without the attacking side of it, which a lot of teams are forgetting about, because that's the harder part, you're not going to win anything. Like, and if Kildare and Galway want to get to a certain level, Tyrone, Monaghan and Donegal have been there. They've figured out that we can't win doing that, and they're trying to. It's like Jim, the difference between Jim McGuinness in 2011 and 2012.
Yep.
You know, 11 was just horrible to watch. It was really defensive. He realised, right, I'm going to have to tweak this. He got out on the pitch, he showed them what he wanted in the break, how many men to commit forward, what to do, who to stay, and actually tactically coached them down on the field. And Donegal were a different animal in an attacking sense the following year. So I don't see evidence of these chasing teams that they have got that. Well, I think Monaghan have a good structure in what they do.
I think that if you're looking at your sort of your top teams and your contenders, look, Mayo will always go for the game. That's the way they play. That's when they play at their best, when they just go on the front foot. I think Monaghan have developed their game a decent amount this
Monaghan
year.
Monaghan are flexible,
and I think I think Donegal have changed their approach enough this season to give me a bit of belief in their performance levels. I still don't think Tyrone have that. I think Tyrone are just going to play the way they play. I don't see them changing.
Me neither.
Galway, on the basis of the league final and stuff like that, they need a massive mentality change there in terms of how they're going to approach games. Otherwise, I see nothing, and they're not going to have a good summer. Outside of that, then, look, Kerry are probably the only other team that you're looking at. Like,
yeah,
maybe that is a realisation from Mickey Hart, knowing that he doesn't have the attacking players, the attacking flair to ultimately go and really press Dublin hard. And, you know, if it was a Stephen O'Neill or a Noam Mulligan playing inside, you know, their approach could be slightly different. But I would totally agree. You know,
Steve, do you think it comes back to just not trusting his defenders individually? Because, you know, in order to play in the front foot, you have to kind of trust your defenders man on man. And most of the teams that do that, you know, you kind of look at their defences, like Monaghan's full back line, like their man-to-man defenders, they're really good. Is it just a case that Mickey Hart thinks, if I push up here, I don't have the legs somewhere in my team or in the middle maybe to track runners, or maybe we're not tight enough at the back?
I think it's him realising that he's got one of the best sweepers in the game, Colin Kavanagh, as well. And, you know, if he's one of the best, why not play him in that role? Man for man, I actually think that Tyrone are sticky enough cornerbacks.
Yeah, they have.
You know,
McCarron is really
tight. Like, that's the way. That's the impression I would have watching them, that they are sticky and they are good. So I sometimes can't understand why are you confusing the issue for them by putting extra bodies back there. Give them their job and give them responsibility.
I don't believe they should be taking so many players back. Colm Kavanagh should be sufficient enough, you know, and when they win possession, let him break out and keep players up the field. But it is their Achilles heel, and has been their Achilles heel over the last couple of years, that they don't have the attacking players. And I'll go back to the point that I've made throughout the National League. If Tyrone had Armagh's full forward line, they'd be a different animal, because Armagh have a flairful forward line that create opportunities and get scores, and, you know, have a ball winner in there, and Andrew Murnan as well. And you know,
I think Tyrone's game plan is so predictable. Like, I mean, I've seen Monaghan. I think you'd be surprised at how much Monaghan can change it up game on game. Sometimes Monaghan go with two sweepers, sometimes they go with one. Sometimes they'll use a fella on the full back line as a sweeper, sometimes they'll use Carl O'Connell, sometimes they'll use Carey, a wing forward, as a double sweeper, and the minute they win it back, Carey and O'Connell are gone. I've seen him against Dublin in Croke Park. He's constantly mixing up. It's a defensive system, but there's so much different stuff going on. I know Tyrone are going to use Kavanagh, and they're going to use their centre back, Justin McMahon or whoever it is, and they're their two sweepers. I know how Tyrone are going to set up. They're always the same at what they do. There's no nuance to what they do.
Does Hart think that this setup, though, helps him attacking in an attacking sense as well? Like, not only is it defensive, but does he think they've got a team of halfbacks that's just run at teams from deep? Maybe it helps him better.
This conversation is making me very wary, because the one thing Mickey Hart does is that every single year, guaranteed, his team are only going to lose whatever game they're knocked out in. They're going to lose it by less than 3 points. So to be, I suppose, to be overly critical of how he sets up his teams or the approach they're taking is, you know, it's probably not a comfortable place to be sitting, because he's so good, and you would have him ahead of probably all the other managers in terms of his, I suppose, approach to the game and intelligence on the game and how he sets up his teams, because he's doing this for over, you know, for how long is he doing it? Every single year, so competitive, no matter who the players are, they're so hard to beat. So it probably is only small little tweaks with Tyrone. It could be a case that, I mean, if their forwards were practicing their shooting a bit more often, then maybe that might be the key difference, because they've been missing enough chances to win every game.
But when you're just like me, Keane, when I played in the full forward line, like, I missed chances. Some days I'd get them, some days I'd miss them. The reason I was inconsistent is because in training I'd be the same. I just wasn't accurate enough. Like, so maybe these lads are missing because they're not bloody. That's just what they do. They
that's
hit
just
wide.
The level, yeah,
that's just
enough.
The level that they're at. And
but did you do any extra work to crack that?
No. No,
exactly.
Yeah. But to be honest, I would have done a bit. But I was more of a natural half back, half forward, and I used to move around so often. And never, if I was told, right, you're full forward for the next 3 years, I go, right, I need to work on this. But I was moved around so often. It's like, where am I coming or whether I'm coming or going. But like, I do think that accuracy is something that you have. You can improve it, obviously. But
absolutely.
Like, I mean, yeah. But I found on the run, I was really accurate heading towards the goal. Mm-hmm. But with my back to goal on the turn, I wasn't that good enough, and I didn't have enough time in that position to maybe practice that as much as I should have. You know, that kind of way. But
the one thing that I notice being involved in management and coaching teams over the past couple of years, when you do a shooting exercise, and most scores are taken from around the D area. When you do a shooting exercise around the D area, players take it for granted that they're always going to score, and their shooting becomes sloppy and erratic. And you know, I can't understand how they don't have full focus in that moment to kick the ball over the bar, because that is where, you know, you expect to win most games from.
Yeah, it's and the winning and losing the games. Like.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, but I put it down to, yeah, do these players actually focus enough on where they're shooting from, or is it just a case of, you know, if it goes over, it goes over, and if it doesn't, it doesn't?
But I wonder, Stevie, are teams practicing shooting from different angles now? Because, like, I mean, that was back in my time as well. You'd be practicing from the D, but now the D's covered. The, yeah, D is well swarmed. So you need to practice shooting from angles
a bit more. My point is, if I kick enough balls over the bar from the D area and build up enough confidence, yeah, I'm going to go out further out the field and have the same confidence to kick the ball over from any angle as much as what it was from in the
like
area.
That's the thing, like when you go up practicing, if you're going up practicing, you're shooting yourself, you don't start out on the 45 metre line out in the wing. You know, you start in close to goal, and you might only kick 20-30 balls from 100% or 90% shot range, but you're leaving that pitch and you're going, right, I had 30 shots, scored 30 points, move on.
And
it builds up over the season that you, if you're doing this regularly enough, if you have real confidence in yourself with the high percentage shots, then in a game situation you always have adrenaline, you'll kick the ball further, you'll just be that bit more focused as well in a match situation, that you'll get the ones from the tighter angles. Yeah. But I think it's a massive thing, like I've said it before, the difference between winning and losing big games is conversion of chances. Like if you get your team and your forwards up above the average conversion rate, which is something like, I think it's about 60%, or it could be less. So if you're getting up above 60%, if you're getting close to 70%, like, you're going to be doing really well to lose the game. You're going to have a complete meltdown at the back, because you're going to get your chances and you're going to take them. And ultimately, that's what it always comes down to. We can talk about defensive systems all we want, but if lads can't kick the ball over the bar when they get their chances, and you might only get 10 chances in a game, but if you score 8 of them, do you know what I mean? Like, as a forward, if you had 10 shots and you score 8, you're going to give your team a very good chance of winning.
And it's just demoralising when you see forwards, like sometimes with Tyrone, don't want to spend too much time in Tyrone, you know, kicking wide, you're like, oh God, because chances are so few and far between. And then you have Monaghan, who have McCarron and McManus, who stick them over, and you're like, yeah, well, we've been out of it for 10 minutes, but there's two in a row for McManus, and just the lift it gives you. I wanted to talk about here, lads, is longer kickouts. Because of the mark now has taken hold, I'm a huge fan of it. I think it speeds up the game really well. Are we going to see more kicks to the middle of the field? Are we going to do away? I know Darla Burns has done the show recently, and he's going to try and bring in a rule that kicking the kick out backwards to the corners, he's going to try and do away with that, and you at least have to go outside the 21. So that, like, it's not too much of a change, but at least you stop who go backwards nearly towards the end line and have to start from back there. It's definitely an improvement. But are we going to see less of that? Because I think that's a blight on the game. Are we going to see more kickouts to the midfield?
It's hard to know, isn't it? It's a possession game. Ultimately, you want to work out a strategy, a kickout strategy that's going to get the best results for your team. And some teams, you know, a lot of teams actually aren't blessed with players like David Mourner in the middle who can go and fetch ball out of the sky, you know, so they have to play the running game to the wings. So, you know, I think each team and each management will have a different approach, but you would expect that in comparison to previous year's championships, there will be more kicked out because of the effect of the mark.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, well, I think you're more encouraged to go there, whether to do en masse, but you definitely, I'd say in all these training camps, I would say kick out is a huge part of that, and not short ones.
Definitely, I'd say every team is going to be working on a longer kick out strategy where you maybe free up a good fetcher and you target him, maybe somebody from your half forward line, because if he catches it clean, he can't be tackled for his first four steps or whatever. Yeah. So he catches that ball, like the Shane Walsh point in the league. Like, that's kind of the ultimate example of what you want. You catch your own kick out, and he can run forward without being checked, and then he can run, keep carrying it on and get a score. The one thing about it is, I suppose, when it comes to all these rule making decisions, I think, look, there's so much goes into it from the likes of Jarlett Burns and the committee or whatever they have there. But, you know, he was talking at the time, because he's a midfielder, so he sees it from his perspective. So he's saying, that everybody, no matter their body shape or whatever, there's a place for them in a Gaelic football pitch. You know, so the big stringy lad now has a role because there's the mark. But you could have a team, a midget, you could have a team of small lads, and you're never going to be able to play that way. So, from their perspective, somebody else is on the committee, he's saying, sure, that's unfair. Sure, now we have no chance if we're playing against a big team. We have to keep kicking it out. We can't take these short kicks.
Have no chance because the big tall lads weren't getting their chance, because they're useless because of this, they're being swarmed. You see, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to gauge.
It is encouraging. You'd imagine most counties have their share of big men and small men. It's about encouraging the all sizes.
I suppose I was looking at more from the club team
from
perspective.
From what it is, I bet you have a club team of small men.
No, we actually have big men.
You can certainly look at it.
Down to the ground. I'm delighted with it.
You can look at it a different way, because Tyrone won All Ireland's not having the biggest midfielders in the world, and what they perfected was the art of getting in and hunting for the breaking ball. So even when you're not the tallest, like Kevin Hughes wasn't the tallest midfielder, but he had a great ability to break the ball down in the right direction to likes of Brandu or Philly Jordan.
Competitive spirit in that zone. Yeah, absolutely.
New players, lads, because before we go to predictions. The big teams, because we're going to cover the big teams here and we'll get some of the smaller ones in the predictions. Monaghan have added Jack McCarron. He's a huge plus to them if he can stay injury free. So we're looking at Monaghan going to definitely have improved from last year. Haven't seen much evidence of Tyrone adding anybody new or noteworthy. It's that young fella that scored the huge score in the club game isn't even on the panel, is he, Conan? What's his name? Something Little, is it? Or
Brennan.
Jeez,
what's his first name?
Should know his
Good
name
man,
because you wrote a piece. So, well, I would have thought you would have known it. Donegal have added loads of lads. Thompson, McGee, Ban Gallagher, Brennan, McBrearty. Donegal look like they definitely could potentially go to another level. Whether these lads can hit championship football, because we all know from playing under 21, then going to league, you're going another step up, and we won't know. That's why they're a little bit of an unknown quantity. Dublin, realistically, not too many new faces. Conn Callaghan is.
But isn't it unbelievable? They win the under 21 All Ireland. Players like, Colin Baskell will, and Conn O'Callaghan, I'd say, are the two that will get into their panel. But
they'll get onto their panel.
I think they were both on the panel or on the fringes of it last season anyway. So.
I think Baskell came on in the All Ireland replay, I think. But I don't see Baskell starting. If Conn O'Callaghan could potentially start, but I don't see who he's going to start ahead of. Is he better than Paddy Andrews and these fellas?
Not at the minute,
it's too close for him. Kerry are a bit like Donegal. They've got loads of new lads. They've Shanahan cornerback Kevin McCarthy, Jack Savage, Jack Barry, and that's not including the under 21s. Thomas Sullivan, Brian O'Buglock has already been there, we won't count him, but they're a bit of an unknown quantity and can maybe come really strong this year as well. Mayo have Boland playing wing forward, of Kirby in midfield, and they've Nally playing centre half forward, who's been playing well. Cohen was there last year as well. So they're not, outside of Kerry and Donegal, we're not seeing a huge amount. Monaghan, kind of one real quality player, so from that, because it's leading into predictions, who's going to take that next step up?
Well, the one concern that I would have about Monaghan is Jack McCarron had a fantastic league campaign. Now he's going to go into a championship campaign as a marked man. Can he cope with that? Conor McManus didn't have such an effective league campaign, so is he going to be able to light the championship up like he has done in previous seasons? So it's a case of trying to get those two guys working together and performing and getting the scores for their team on a consistent basis, so it'll be interesting. But certainly the signs are encouraging from a Monaghan point of view.
I definitely agree, which is as well, that the gap is close to Dublin. But Dublin are going for three in a row. Their motivation can't be at it. Look how hard it is to retain it, And if Dublin were going for their first one, they would have beaten Mayo in the All-Ireland final. I think that raw kind of hunger. Now, they're going for three in a row this time. Is that kind of drive, hunger there to just keep winning? Maybe the losing the league final is the best thing that could have happened to them. But I do see it being not the foregone conclusion, potentially, that it would be. And the three Ulster teams, while I don't see any of the three of them winning All-Ireland, they could easily beat Kerry, Mayo or Dublin, you know, in a quarter final or in a semi final. So you're even unsure about who's going to be the finalist. So maybe it is that little bit more exciting of a championship than we've been having in the last while.
It looks like Dublin are going to avoid Kerry and Mayo. If Kerry and Mayo win their respective provincial championships, Dublin will avoid them until the final as well, though. So if you are looking at it, it's going to be an Ulster team, possibly. But you know how they perform then in quarterfinals and semi. Sometimes it's not as consistent. So I think they've got the easier path. If you avoid Kerry or Mayo, you do have an easier path to the final. So I think you can almost take their chances that they will be in the final, and in that case they should automatically be favoured.
Okay, listen, we'll get to predictions now next.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
well,
at me
a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Predictions, lads, that we're going to come back and reference these in September, or maybe after the All-Stars, because myself, Stevie and Conan had great crack laughing at ourselves and our league predictions. So maybe these are
just on that. I haven't been back in since the league preview, and I believe I came out on top in the end.
No, well, the finals have nothing to do, but I won the league outright. Forget about the finals.
It's all about performing on the final day and getting the result right, and I was the one that got it all.
I think it was weighted. It was double points for getting the league winner, was it?
I think for calling Kerry to beat Dublin, for calling Derry or Kerry to beat Dublin, yeah. Well, we'll call it a draw. Will we just keep the two of you happy?
No, just draws.
Our mailmen don't
we're
do draws. Right. Well, lads, we'll start with the provincial winners, and sure, this is bloody easy, except for the Ulster Championship. So I presume we're all gone Dublin, Kerry, and Mayo. Outside of Ulster. Stevie, no.
No.
Oh, he likes a wild card.
He does love a wild card. Right?
I'm going for Throne, Kerry, Dublin, and Galway.
Oh, you're going for Galway in
I don't think it's such a big option.
Well, I can't believe you're not going for Galway. Have you brainwashed, Stevie?
No, I tell you.
You have absolutely been raving about Galway all the campaign, all league campaign. You have to be going for them.
I'm not going for them. And I've told you, Galway are a 3-year work in progress. Did I not say that?
Listen, you said they're going to win the All-Ireland the next three years.
I was very disappointed with their tactics in the league final. And I think if they continue that, they've no chance of beating the likes of Mayo. I know they caught them last year, but they caught them on the hop last year. I think Mayo will be primed to beat them in Connacht. Now, that's not to say I don't have Galway getting back into maybe a semi-final or something if they start using the brilliant forwards that they have. So you went for Tyrone, Dublin, Kerry and Galway.
Yeah.
Right. Keane, who did you go for?
I went for Donegal, Mayo, Dublin, Kerry.
Donegal, Mayo, Dublin, Kerry. Right. Conan.
Mayo, Dublin, Kerry, and I went for Monaghan because I can't pick between Tyrone and Donegal basically in the other semi-final.
Yeah, I've gone for the same actually. I think Monaghan should get to a final. The toughest game they're going to have is Cavan. Now that is a local derby, and if the league game is anything to go by, it's going to be a snore fest of the highest order. Was it 9-8 in the league or something ridiculous? But it was a bad day. Oh, they drew. Yeah. Sorry, it was a draw. Yeah, because it actually ruined my accumulator. But I've gone for Monaghan only because that they get a nice way through to the final. And look, to be honest with you, not only because of that, they've a bloody brilliant team. There's Jack McCarron in there too, and they're tactically flexible, and the final will be in Clonus in their home ground. So I think Monaghan might be a nice bet.
I've gone against them just because of the extra game to get to the final.
The preliminary. Well,
that does seem to sap teams.
Traditionally, it has been a barrier for teams.
Donegal did it though, didn't they?
I think they were the first to do it.
First to do it.
They did it twice in a row.
Did it twice in a row. Right, lads. All Ireland winners is next. So I've gone for Dublin.
Dublin.
Kerry to beat Dublin in the final.
Kerry to win.
Kerry to win. Yeah. Beat Dublin in the final. I'm going for a Kerry Dublin final.
Kerry Dublin.
Presume everybody's because they avoid each other. It is Connacht versus Munster and Leinster versus Ulster, like Conan was saying earlier. Right, so there's two Kerrys and two Dublins for that. We're not going too far wrong here. Top scorer, lads. Now, we'll all have the same one here. I know that for a fact. Dean Rock, right?
Yeah.
I have Dean Rock. Yeah. I was going to try and be smart, but then
Listen, Dean Rock is a free taker for the best team in Ireland, and he's in a province where they're probably going to walk through it. So, like, I mean, he's getting a huge head start. Killian O'Connor arguably used to have a good one, but if Mayo had been drawn in New York or one or two handier ones than maybe Galway and Roscommon, you'd fancy Killian more. But Killian, I don't think will beat Dean Rock. Here's one I might be throwing, and not sure if I said this to you lads, because we're all in agreement with Dean Rock. Who do you fancy for top scorer from play?
I went with Paul Geaney.
Paul Geaney was top scorer last year from play. Yeah,
oh, was he?
Yeah, he's a good call. I've gone for James O'Donoghue because I think Kerry will make the final, and I think that he's primed for a big year. I told you I'd get James O'Donoghue back into the predictions.
I would be going for Geaney as well, just because he gets goals and O'Donoghue doesn't really get as many.
Right, okay. Stevie, what do you think? You have to go... When we're all in agreement that Kerry and Dublin are getting to the final, you have to try and find one.
I think Geaney as well. You know, he's proved it in the National League that he's a good scorer and he's a good threat from open play as well. So, you know, they will have the easiest passage all the way through to a final, so you'd expect Geaney to be the man, the top scorer from play.
The only thing about that is it's two provincial games, but then the thing about that is it's two games in Munster, so you're right.
Well, that's it. So he plays the winner of Clare and Waterford. He could fill
Clare
his boots
Limerick.
There. Clare and Limerick, and then he'll have Tipperary or Cork. Mm. You'd fancy Kerry to win that one by 6 or 7 points.
You're,
no matter
you're looking
who.
At Geaney possibly getting 1-3 or 2-2 in both of those
I'll
matches.
Tell you one surprise player we haven't spoke about actually yet would be Paddy McBrady. You know, I think he's got the strength and ability to take players on, and he's also got an eye for goal as well, so he could be worth watching from open play as well.
Yeah, you see, this is the thing. Like, I mean, with
Donegal only going to play Antrim in the first game, so again, he could put up a big tally there.
Or else, no. Have you seen Antrim playing recently? He won't. That'll be a 10-8 kind of scoreline. Like, Antrim just...
Donegal would beat Antrim comfortably.
Do you think so, yeah? Well, Antrim play incredibly negative in the Ulster Championship. It's unbelievable. Like, they don't come out to play at all. They've no confidence whatsoever. All right, manager of the year, lads, because I suppose like this is pretty much Jim Gavin for me, because Dublin, I think, will win three in a row. So, I might not have tipped Dublin because I didn't tip Dublin to win the All-Ireland last year. But after losing the league final, genuinely, I think that maybe has taught them you can't cruise through games like we thought we could, because that'll get into your head. The whole way through the league, they were winning games without playing brilliantly, just pulling them out of the bag, depending on comebacks, getting the comebacks. But now they realise, right, that comeback's not working anymore. We actually have to go to our 100%. I don't think they're at their 100%. But anyways, Jim Gavin, my old buddy, I think will be manager of the year. And he gave a brilliant speech in the City West later on that night at the banquet, I'm sure. Stevie.
I'm opting for Eamon Fitzmaurice. I think he got his tactics right in the league final. And he's still a young manager that's always improving. And, you know, he has experience of winning All-Ireland. So I believe that he has the team to kick on and compete and win All-Ireland, and I'm going to go for him.
The great thing about Fitzmaurice as well, just quickly, is that Kerry won a league and Fitzmaurice actually gave an opinion and, you know, went out publicly saying Dublin aren't any, and I'd love that to banish the myth that you can't say stuff before a game. Fitzmaurice did, and he won a league. Now, if Fitzmaurice did that and lost the league, everyone would have said, oh, Fitzmaurice should have kept his mouth shut. But they never say, well, Fitzmaurice's bullishness actually empowered his team and said, look, we're Kerry, they're painted as angels, we're going to go up and beat them. Why is that never said after a game, that Fitzmaurice actually coming out and like being a bit like Eddie Jones in the rugby? That can empower teams, and we've talked about this on a previous podcast. So that's all I have to say on it. Keane.
Well, because I've predicted Kerry for the All-Ireland, I'd have to go for Fitzmaurice as well. He's after this. If he does the double for the league and championship, you'd have to put him down. Now, I know it's sort of, you're looking at teams that potentially could have a good run in the championship, or maybe really what you want,
like
for your manager of the year, a team that overachieves really is what you're looking at, or shows a significant sign of improvement. So, but when I look at the championship, it's very hard to see.
Like, can Andy McEntee make a quarter final and get it? Can you know?
I was looking at that, and if Meath get to a Leinster final, they go through the qualifiers. You know, you could see them back in an All Ireland quarter final where they would play the Ulster champions, which could be Donegal or Monaghan. If Meath got to that stage, if Meath got to an All Ireland semi final, Andy McEntee be manager of the year.
Yeah.
If they get to a quarter final, he'll have shown significant signs of improvement for me. But a quarter final, I don't think, would be considered
enough.
That to me is almost like the bare minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know?
Right.
So
it
should be at
like
this stage. And you have to beat a top team. Like, if you're overachieving, you have to beat a team that's maybe in the division above you in the championship in a big, big game. So it's just so hard at this stage to kind of judge that, because you don't know who people are going to get in qualifiers. Mm. But look, I think Meade can do something. I think Andy is probably going to have, he's going to have them as well prepared as they can possibly be, and then it remains to be seen whether the players can perform.
Can Armagh be a bolter, Stevie? Because like, I genuinely believe they're a much better team than Division. They should be out of Division 3. Yeah. They threw away Leeds against Leash and Sligo, which would have saw them winning the league, you know, the league comfortably. They ran up huge scores against good teams. I wouldn't say good teams, but they ran up huge scores, so their forward line, like you said, is very good, so they could potentially, like maybe 3 years ago,
yeah, exactly, playing down in the first round, if they can get through that game, and it's going to be a cracker of a game, I believe, if they can get through that, they'll get a lot of belief and confidence from it. I'm delighted to hear you all saying that Monaghan's definitely going to go to an Ulster final, because
there's history
between Armagh and Monaghan, and you know, Armagh, when they weren't even at their best a few years ago, managed to get a draw out of Monaghan. Yes, Monaghan are probably better set up and better prepared now, but I'd be confident enough that they can go on a run. Can they get to an Ulster final? I believe that they can get to an Ulster final. Will they win it? No, I don't think so. I don't think they're equipped this year, but getting on a run and getting quarter final stages, I think, is certainly within Armagh's capabilities for this year.
And I think you kind of have to look at it over the season as a whole, like take the league into account as well. I mean, in terms of teams that have performed well, or performed better than expected, Kildare have probably done better than expected to get promotion up to Division 1. So if they have a reasonable league camp or a championship campaign, you'd definitely be putting Keane O'Neill in the mix.
Yeah, they disappointed me in the league final too. Honestly, I talked up Kildare and Galway and I watched that game and I was like, ah lads, come on, they've been running up big scores, and when you don't see enough of these teams, you think they're really, jeez, it was very, very disappointing. And Galway, in fairness, Kildare weren't as defensive as Galway. Galway were the one that upset me a little bit more than Kildare. Kildare were trying to leave three up, but then you have this nonsense of attacking the three fellas back marking them, will go on and join an attack, and then Kildare's kind of system is all messed up, and then the Kildare backs attacking were doing the same to the goal, and it was just a jumble of absolute shite. So it was, second half was a bit better, but I don't want to judge it on one game, but I've softened on my love for the Kildare and Galway teams.
I love how we're talking about
winning All-Ireland though in the next 3 years.
We're talking about manager of the year and you're crying about something that happened 4 weeks ago.
All right,
you still get angry about
give us your I don't think I can put into words how upset I was at that game. I was really annoyed.
I went for Malachy O'Rourke, you'd be happy to hear, although we just changed it there.
I'm delighted to hear that.
I think Monaghan are definitely going to get the Ulster final, and they'll probably win it when they're there. And I think this could be the year that Monaghan will finally win an All Ireland quarter final as well, and that should be enough for them.
Yeah, they're due one, and Monaghan,
good league campaign. Too.
Yeah, very good league campaign, very impressive. You wonder, the only thing on Monaghan which would worry me now, I've tipped them to win Ulster, is that they've hit the ground in February the 1st, Mayo away. They're banging the door of the dressing room a while now, so that they might keep that going throughout the Ulster, but they seem to.
Yeah, and you look at the strength that they have in the whole squad, you know, have they got the players to come in and make an effective difference in the championship? I'm not so sure that they do. I think they're playing more or less their strongest team every game, and that might come against them. But certainly Malachy O'Rourke, if Monaghan do get to an Ulster final, he's got a great record in Ulster finals, so you would expect him to be ultra competitive there.
Yeah, okay, before we finish, lads, biggest disappointment of the year. Now I'm going to go with, like, we could all actually agree on this, lads. We've been agreeing on a lot, but like, I mean, they're probably because there's that few All-Ireland contenders, like, I mean, you know, the pool's not that big. I should have pointed out who all these teams beat in their provincial winners, provincial finals. I'm going for Dublin Meade, I'm going for Monaghan to play Tyrone, and I'm going for Kerry to beat Tipperary, and I'm going for Mayo to beat Roscommon, because that's on the easy side. And my biggest disappointment is Cork. But is that even a disappointment anymore? Yeah. I'm not so sure.
I consider Cork, and actually I don't think that it would be a disappointment anymore. My
Tipperary could be either, you know.
But my choices are actually two. I've gone for Kildare and Tipperary. Tipperary based on last year's championship performance, and Kildare based on this year's league campaign. And there's going to be added pressure on those two teams to kick on and improve on recent results. And I think if it doesn't go their way, you know, there will be huge disappointments because of Tipperary's success at underage level recently and Kildare's renewed energy from this year's league campaign.
Yeah, so I think Tipperary being a disappointment purely because they can't possibly reach the heights they did the previous year. Keane, what about you?
Yeah, I went for Tyrone as being the biggest disappointment. I just don't see them kicking on from their early season league campaign. And or their early season league form, which was very good, which everyone was talking them up as being the competitors for Dublin. As the league finished up, I just don't see it. I see they're going to have a disappointing Ulster campaign, probably losing a semi-final and probably losing last round of qualifiers.
That's Kildare.
Tyrone.
Oh, Tyrone for that, right? Okay, yeah. Cannon. Well, we've one more actually, lads. I forgot player of the year. Cannon, well, let's finish on disappointment first.
Yeah, Galway. I think their first game of the championship, they'll be out of the Connacht, having lost to Mayo, and then God knows what holds for them in the qualifiers.
You're just saying that to wind me up. I guess that's all you're doing. My All Ireland contenders are going to be the biggest disappointment. I'm not falling for this, Cannon. I'm not falling for your tricks. Player of the year, I forgot, lads. Obviously, the glamour one. I'm going for David Moran because Kerry are going to make the final. They'll be pipped in a classic. Jack Barry's a brilliant foil for him. He'll take care of the Fentons and let David Moran dominate. And there's not a better dominating, classy Rolls Royce of a player in the country. And the form he's in this year, injury free the last 2 years, I think David Moran is a banker for player of the year. That's my pitch over.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, and my stomach is going like mad. But I'm agreeing with you. I think he's a classy midfielder. He's probably the most outstanding midfielder in the country. It would be a fantastic year for David Moran to finish as an All-Ireland champion, footballer of the year, picked up the man of the match in the National League final. What a footballer, and he's got a great ability to drive the team forward and kick scores as well. And I expect David Moran, if Kerry win the All-Ireland, that he'll be the main player.
Keane.
God, this is boring, yeah. David Moran again. Had him written down, so I'm not going to change my mind, and you've all said enough about him. He's brilliant.
Right,
for Philly McMahon, I think he's been the best player in the league. I think he's the best fullback in the country at the minute, and I think that will come in very handy in the championship. I think Dublin will win the championship, and he'll probably score 5 points along the way as well.
Yeah, okay, definitely Philly. The only thing that could catch Philly is that if teams go away from this really defensive style, Philly won't find himself up in the forwards as much, because he absolutely loves playing these teams, and he's eye catching. Yeah. But like, if he's got a player who's holding his position a bit more, it's not as easy to be heading on without that kind of cover back there. You can't just abandon, if Keane O'Sullivan's marking someone, you can't just abandon your man and let Keane pick him up. But yeah, no, that'll be interesting, and it's nice that we're not all going David Moran full house. David Moran better have a bloody good year, because Dublin are winning the All-Ireland, and David needs to be really outstanding to get player of the year with my predictions. Right, lads, that's all we have time for. We'll be back next Thursday with a preview of that weekend's action. It is start of the Ulster Championship and start of the Leinster Championship, aren't I right? Yes, yeah. I'm definitely right. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.